Monday morning, this is Scotland's Talkin'. I'm Ali Bally. It's 7.5 minutes now after 11. Have you suffered from depression? And have you suffered from depression in silence? Going to talk about that in a moment. Come to that in a second. But we were talking, of course, as well about banning alcohol adverts. Is that the answer to stopping underage drinking in Scotland? Well, a couple of more calls. Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, when Loughness and Ra, the children allowed in the pubs after 10 o'clock at night at 16, the parents actually dropped them off.
Right.
So how's that stopping it?
How's it stopping it? When they get to the age of 16, Jim, do you think they should be gradually eased into it? I wonder, are they talking even younger than that? You know, that they can recognise beer brands but not recognise ice cream brands. There seems something wrong there, is there not?
When I asked about it, they said to keep the trouble off the streets. As long as they're in the pubs, it kept the trouble off the streets. It's the only place in Scotland I know that the 16-year-olds can go into pubs.
Right, well, I think 16-year-olds can go into pubs, but is it not where food is being served or something like that? But you're saying this is later on in the evening?
10 o'clock at night.
10 o'clock at night. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. It's not gradually introducing them. That's just throwing them into it. Derek, what's your thoughts? Thanks, Jim.
Hello. Yeah. Banning advertising doesn't do anything. It's all about education. You don't advertise cannabis, heroin, cocaine, we're still taking it. Mm-hmm. It's about education. Get them when they're in primary school and just teach them how to drink moderately, enjoy it. It's a social thing.
So you're not saying it should be in the primary school saying, don't touch this stuff, never open a bottle, because that won't work, will it?
The worst thing you can tell some a child to do, don't do it. That's the worst thing you can tell any kid, don't do that, because they'll go and do it.
But what about the amount of, you know, I mentioned earlier about how now in the home you can find quite an array of drink compared to what you used to do 20 odd years ago. You know, mum and dad are sitting with the bottles of wine, they're sitting with the vodka, the gin and tonics and all this type of stuff. So that their kids are being brought up with alcohol, surely. Are they getting this from the families?
Well, possibly, yes. But there again, that goes down to banning smoking in pubs. People can't afford to go to pubs. You can't go to spend on this £100 a night standing outside in the freezing rain to get a cigarette. So people are, it's cheap to buy alcohol, eh? So they're buying it.
Surely we don't need any more bans in this country.
It's enough, man. It's becoming a political state. Are they going to just turn around and tell people you have 3 pints and they go home in your bed at 10 o'clock? That's what they're trying to do with cigarettes. Ban that, doesn't stop them smoking it.
But the banning of cigarettes in public places, as far as a non-smoker like me is concerned, it's the best thing that ever happened.
Well, yeah, I could tell. I smoked since I was 14. I stopped 5 years ago.
Right.
But why not give people a choice? Have smoking pubs and non-smoking pubs. As everything, you know, it's... The society's becoming, it's do what we tell you, basically. That's what I think.
Oh, I agree with you on that, Derek.
They're not giving people a choice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where it stops, but regarding the advertising, I don't think it makes any difference. Kids will try it. They'll try anything.
Okay, Derek, thank you very much indeed. We'll leave it there. A good point you make that we don't see adverts for heroin and cannabis, etc. And we stopped advertising smoking, but they're still doing it. They're still trying it. So onto another subject I wanted to talk about today, which I thought this was very interesting. And it's, do we put too much pressure on our top sportsmen and women, and does that start when their children, you know, and they're maybe decided to take up a sport or whatever? Do we as parents, as grannies, uncles, aunties, whatever, granddads, do we actually put too much pressure on? Joining me now is Scottish Olympic silver medal winning swimmer Michael Jameson. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, you've announced your retirement, that's fine, and you now feel that you're sharing with us what you've gone through. What was the reason for sharing this, Michael, when you've kept it inside you for so long?
I think there was a few reasons to it, really. I was aware of how much it affected my career over the last few years, and I think just over that period, as I felt like my knowledge of the subject was growing. I was able to sort of pick a few athletes that I knew were going through similar sort of things. And, you know, it's obviously a pretty sensitive subject. It's something that's, you know, deeply personal. But for me, I think it's becoming more and more popular. Or popular is the wrong choice of word there. But it's, you know, there's so many athletes going through similar issues. And I think I just felt a sort of sense of responsibility to try and shed some light on it, because it has been a subject that's come into the spotlight in recent years.
And it is something that a lot of people will identify with you, Michael, isn't it? And something that they will have maybe suffered from in silence.
Yeah, and I think that's already been evident. You know, the response to the article was really humbling. There were so many athletes, elite athletes across different sports that got in contact to report similar issues. And as I said, it has been a subject that's gaining more and more attention. The spotlight has been shone on it in recent years. And, I think overall that level of awareness of it is rising.
So how did your mental health suffer when you were swimming then?
I think it was maybe back in 2009 first became aware that there were periods throughout the swim season where I would start to report these symptoms of, you know, you almost feel like your body's on standby mode. There's no sort of response there. There's no real level of emotion or motivation. And from that period for the following few years, I just thought it was something that a lot of people went through, and it was just kind of part and parcel of life, and it was also at a level where it was manageable. You know, those periods weren't particularly long, and I think, you know, probably after Olympics going into 2013, it just sort of went, you know, carried on, went to another level really, and a level that I knew I wasn't really able to manage without the help of professionals.
And did this then create a pressure on yourself, from yourself, to try and do better? Or how did it affect you? I mean, did you say to yourself, hang on, I really got to push myself even harder here?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's been evident throughout my career is, you know, we often talk about the pressure on athletes, but it's, a lot of that comes internally. It's, you know, the athletes at the top of all these Olympic sports nowadays, they put far more pressure on themselves to improve their performance than any external outlets do, the media, family, friends, whatever it may be. You know, athletes nowadays are so, it's almost like a hyper-focus. They become so self-absorbed in trying to achieve their performance goals, and, you know, other areas like mental health is something that doesn't get much focus. So, I think it did start to snowball a little bit, and I just expected more and more of myself on a daily basis, and was becoming far too analytical of my performance. And, you know, when you're training 6, 7, 8 hours a day, you can't expect to be at your absolute best every day. That, you know, that is training. You go through all sorts of physiological adaptations as your body changes and improves and tries to grow and develop, and, you know, you're not able to hit your target times or your goal times or whatever that may be on a daily basis. But, you know, for some reason I thought that I should be able to do that every day.
What about support for you then? When you were feeling that, and, you know, you were feeling that you were, putting yourself under pressure, was there anybody in your immediate team, was there anybody round about you who could have spotted what was going on here to help you?
There was, you know, one of my best friends. He's had some experience of it within his family, and he actually approached me years and years ago, back in 2009, and said, look, I'm starting to see some traits within your personality that are quite similar to, you know, the people in my family that have been around and have suffered with it. So that was kind of what shed some light on it initially. But it becomes easy to hide it. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you know, when you're training in a performance centre like I was with, you know, 12 world-class athletes, you know, everyone is coming to work every day trying to improve and be better. And, you know, as an athlete, you're obviously, you spend a lot of your time pretty tired and exhausted, and there's times where you come into training and you just want to get on with the job in hand. It's not, you know, you don't go there for a social event, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it just becomes quite easy to hide it.
So when you're turning up at swimming, or you were turning up for, you know, do you go in there and you're saying, you know, you don't turn up to not perform, you turn up to get on with your training. So you do you sort of put that game face on? You know, you say to yourself, right, here we go. I've just got a couple of hours here. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, in a way, it's fairly simple. You turn up to training, you go into the changing rooms, you see a few of your teammates. Hi, how you doing? There's some small talk exchanged. You're on to poolside and, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, you start the session. And obviously, when you're in the water, swimming's not the most socially engaging sport. There's a lot of time where your head is under the water and it's just you and your own thoughts. So, but even in that frame of mind, I'm still there to perform. I'm still able to push myself. It's just that I'm also aware that, you know, something's holding me back a bit.
And I would imagine you don't want to show a weakness to any of your teammates either.
No, of course. And I think that's one of the main problems where athletes or members of the public or whoever it is that's suffering with some mental health issues, I think they'll be able to relate to this. Is, you know, I didn't want to negatively affect someone else's day, someone else's training session, because, you know, in that sort of performance environment, people are training to win Olympic medals, to become Olympic champion, break world records, and every training session is important. So if you're sort of pouring these negative thoughts out onto someone else, that's going to have an effect on their mood state. So I think, yeah, that became easier to bottle it up because I didn't want to negatively affect someone else's day.
Michael, when you said there, you know, that when you're swimming, it's not the most sociable thing. When you're in the water, you know, you're in there to do a job and get the training done. Looking back on this, would you say that this can affect people like yourself who are not part of a big team? You know, solo sports people, that's what I'm trying to get at here. People who go out there and have to really just training on their own. Yes, you're training with others around about you, but you're on your own.
Yeah, I think the sort of individual sports, you know, that there's a bit extra to them, I guess. That, you know, within swimming, the volume of training is so high, you know, there's not really anywhere to hide. And I think that's where that, you know, that area of crossover is, because there's a great deal of respect between, you know, elite swimmers and athletes that are able to make the international podiums at these major events, because there's nowhere to hide. If you do not put the work in the pool, if you're not training 5, 6, 7 hours a day, you know, you won't get that level of success. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, that's almost 100% true. That's, you know, any swimmer that's able to make an international podium has put the hours in over a huge period of time. And yeah, as I said, it's, you know, we train in groups of 12 to 16, but for the majority of that time, your head's in the water.
Yeah.
The set's delivered and you try and deliver that.
A lot of athletes find the hardest time for their mental health is after they've retired. Is that a worry? Should we be concerned?
No, I think, you know, I'm much, much healthier now than I was, you know, in previous years. And, you know, I'm kind of getting to the stage now where I've accepted that chapter of my life, the swimming is done. So, I mean, I'm trying to look at that positively. Obviously, I've got a fresh slate.
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, I could start anything I wanted to now. And yes, I think I'll miss the competition. I'll miss the training even more, I think, strangely. But I think the main thing is put into bed that I'll never be able to you know, start in a field that I could potentially be the best in the world at. That's the draw as an athlete. You're training to become the best swimmer in the world, and you know, I'm obviously not going to be able to get to that level in whatever field I go into. But you know, the positive side is that I've got a completely fresh slate, and hopefully I'm able to help a few athletes that are struggling with mental health issues.
After your experience and with looking at coaching younger swimmers, how do you feel about pushing young kids on now, knowing that it can mess with your head a bit?
Well, it's a very fine line, isn't it? Because the bottom line is to succeed in elite sport, there's a great deal of training that's mm-hmm. involved. You know, we can't hide from that. We can't get away from that. And you know, for the majority of my career, I loved that. And I loved that training element of it and working hard. I think that was one of my main strengths throughout my career. I think for me, it's just about, you know, especially from a young age, I'm a huge believer in a sort of multi-sport background. I think developing skills across different sports will transfer into whatever sport you then specialise in. And I think on the side of that, it's just about raising awareness of mental health mm-hmm. and being aware of it, trying to create that sort of social environment at training you know, having athletes speak out more regularly and not, you know, kind of not be scared to share whatever they're feeling.
There will be, Michael, somebody listening today, I have no doubt, who has been hiding the symptoms that you've just been talking about, whether they be an athlete, a swimmer, or just Joe Bloggs walking down the street. And what advice would you give them?
I think it's nowadays, we, you know, as I said, the spotlight has been shone on mental health in recent years. And given the reaction I've had from the article, I know there are athletes out there that are struggling with similar things. It's about trying to speak to professionals as early in the process as possible, because when I did eventually, you know, approach someone for help,
what was the wake up call there for you, Michael, when you did decide?
It was a period in Bath when I was just completely disconnected. You know, I think that you know, that's the period when it was at its worst, and you know, I was just having some pretty horrible dreams and thoughts that, you know, I didn't want to be here, full stop. And you know, I think when it gets to that level, it becomes quite frightening. And I think that was it, really. I just thought, this has gone too far to be having thoughts that I don't want to be here, full stop, when I've got such amazing family and friends around me. That was the final straw.
Michael, thank you very much indeed for talking and sharing your experience with us. I think that there will be some people today who can identify with you. I'm quite sure, because as you say, there are a lot of people around that are going there. But the advice would be to get help, wouldn't it? To talk to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the important thing. When I did eventually approach someone for help, I had a huge deal of support.
Right.
You know, there are support networks there to help athletes. But that first step has to come from the individual. And as hard and as challenging as that seems at times, you know, from my own experience, I could have stopped this much, much earlier if I'd have taken that first step.
Well, once again, thank you very much indeed, Michael, for joining us and sharing your thoughts with us today. I'm sure that's a few people have got some comfort from that. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.